Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps. Episode 146 for December 29, 2010. Tiki Wiki CMS Groupware. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software, roughly weekly, almost weekly. I am your host, most of the time, Randall Schwartz. I am here, Merlin at StoneEdge.com, to talk to you about the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, the philosophies, the analyses, the just generally chit-chatting about things that I'm doing in life. So anyway, here we are once again. I know you missed me. I know you didn't see, you know, last week I wasn't able to be on the show because I was on a cruise. What's this, a note from the future? I'm supposed to mention that I've got pictures, and I'll be giving the URL at the end of the show. Okay, note from the future. Thank you. Thank you, note from the future. Anyway, I also, for those of you that are watching on the live stream as well, you can see that the Mount Hood is still behind me, brightly lit, actually. The sun just came out, which is really nice. I'm still in my old house for at least a little while longer. I don't know when I'm actually leaving. It's been a month by month. We're seeing if the house sits sold or not. So, before I keep going... Oh my God, Simon, I've completely left you out of the loop. My host this week is, in fact, Simon Phipps.
It's a pleasure to see you. Here we are between Christmas and New Year, and I'm just digging into the Glenfiddich. I'd like to toast you here, Randall, for all your cruising.
Oh, thank you. You know, I toast myself enough on these cruises. So
yes, I have heard that rumor. Yes.
The karaoke, you know, between the karaoke and the late night disco, I have a great time.
Who's the guest today? Do we have a guest?
That's a good idea. Let's talk. We actually do have a guest. We're not just rambling along here. We have an interesting project, as far as I can tell, from looking through all the materials on it that he sent me. It was a voluminous amount of preparation done for me. Again, I appreciate that when the guests do that, although it's sometimes a bit overwhelming. I only have about an hour before I do this show to actually look at the actual product. I'm sorry. But we've got Mark Laporte, and I'm told he's no relation to Leo Laporte. So sorry about that for all the people trying to figure this out. Mark Laporte is going to come on and talk about the Tiki Wiki CMS Groupware. Boy, that's a lot of stuff. From what I can tell, it's a wiki. That's why wiki's in there somewhere. And it's CMS, which is content management system. We've actually interviewed a bunch of people over the last year or two about CMS systems. So some of you are going, oh my God, not another CMS system. But I think you'll appreciate this one. I think there's some unique aspects to this CMS content management system that are a little different because there's some groupware included, like a spreadsheet, like a calendaring system, like a bug tracking system. So it's kind of lots and lots of moving parts in this thing. So I'm really looking forward to getting more information about how this all goes together. That's going to be our guest. But I just want to say before we go a little bit too much further, before we bring the guest on, I got a lot of great feedback about last week's show. Well, it wasn't last week, it was 2 weeks ago, but the last show. John O'Bacon and I chatted about his project, Severed Fifth. And he said he's gotten a lot of feedback since then. I saw a lot of Twitter activity on it. A lot of people of you out there that had not known that this is some other aspect of John O'Bacon that makes him even more wonderful than just being the Ubuntu community manager. So if you are a musician, I really encourage you, or you know musicians, or you're a music fan, I think that covers everybody now, somehow involved in the music consuming or producing industries, then go check that show out if you haven't already. If you're just picking up this show for the first time, go back and look at episode 145. I think you'll really appreciate that. One other thing that's happened in the last couple of days, and Simon and I both have been tweeting about this back and forth, I recently saw, and I'm not going to embarrass them by naming the project, but I recently saw an announcement for a project that was basically preaching to the choir. And it was silly because it's like, okay, we just released version 4, and here's the URL, and go check it out. And I was like, version 4 of what? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, I can't get it from the name, and the name had virtual in it, so I thought, well, everything's virtual these days, so that doesn't even narrow it down. And I had this discussion, this is actually in a public forum, so you could actually, if you searched long enough, you'd actually see my discussion on this. But again, I won't embarrass them in this show. But Simon, it actually prompted me to actually announce in Twitter, I said, you know, look, if you're going to announce something, don't just preach to the choir. Include at least one sentence where I can distinguish in that announcement whether it's something I'm interested in or not interested in, because you know what? If you don't have at least one sentence about the project, and I'm vaguely not interested just because there's nothing cool about the name of the project, I'm not going to check it out. I'm not going to go to your URL. And they said, well, it's trivial to click in. But no. A lot of people chimed in after that saying, no, we actually were disinterested because you didn't say anything about your project. So, Simon, what did you think about that discussion we were having online there?
Well, you know, I think there's actually quite a lot of things that are like that. It's all very well. I think we actually had that project on the show sometime last year, even. Not that we're going to name who they are.
This project's never been on that one.
You click through on those links, and even when you get to the website, you still can't find out what the project actually does without downloading the code and compiling it. That's a fairly basic mistake to make in a community. I wonder, Randall, whether we ought to have some kind of a segment about that on the show sometime. Maybe throughout the series, and maybe have some kind of a rundown at the end of the season.
Yeah, that's actually worth discussing, and we were chatting a little bit about that on Twitter already. But I there's so many lessons to be learned from, especially like shows like Floss Weekly and Linux Outlaws and things like that, where they're actually talking to open source software projects all the time. And I think little things like this. I mean, it's hard enough just being an open source project and trying to figure out a funding model, trying to figure out a community model, trying to figure out the licenses. But there's a lot of useful what works and what doesn't that's already been distilled and people already know about this stuff. So I'm actually looking at, I think if we included maybe a 1 minute or 2 minute segment at the beginning or ending of each show going forward, and I like your idea, maybe once a quarter or something, we could bring on and actually have like a discussion panel around people. Panel with experts like you and me, and maybe was it Brockmeyer, right? So Zonka.
Yeah, Zonka. I mean, it would make a very, very easy end of season show to put together when you run out of guests as well, Randy. Not that I'm looking at the spreadsheet, that's ever likely to happen.
Running out of guests ain't happening for a long time. I have such a long, I've got 400 names now on the list, and I do appreciate the fact that that's being crowdsourced. It's really nice that it's working out that way. But I just wanted to say, if you're the brief takeaway is, if you're going to make an announcement, include at least one sentence that's not preaching to the choir, one sentence that's enrolling rather than just talking about. So that's the takeaway for today. And any last thoughts about that or about our upcoming guest, Simon, before we get started?
Well, I'm very interested, actually, in the guest we've got coming on today. I hadn't looked at Tiki before the brief came through for this program, and I'm going to be quite interested to find out what the project's about and what the community is about. You know, I spoke at the PostgreSQL conference in Germany just before the holidays, and I'm very impressed by that community, by the fact that it's a big community of contributors rather than a corporate orchestrated activity. And it looks like Tiki could be the same thing. So I'm going to be very interested to dig into that and find out about its community.
Very good. Very good. Well, let's without further ado, since we've now been chatting for 7 minutes, without further ado, let's go ahead. And it's the holidays. That's why I'm laughing so much, guys. It's just been great. Let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Hey, good to talk to you, finally.
Yes.
And only people watching the live show will know what that meant. Anyway, where are we speaking to you from?
I live in Montreal.
Montreal? Oh, Canada. All right. Mm-hmm. Up there, White North. Well, I did a horrible job introducing Tiki Wiki CMS groupware during the opening of the show. But, because I said it's a wiki. So if you want to please start the show by elaborating, just give us sort of, actually, let's start by saying what problem it solves and then describe what it is.
Well, in a nutshell, very shortly, it's a tool to make a website. That website could be for internal use or for a public website. And its particularity has lots of features. So the name is TikiWiki CMS Groupware. So those are the main features. But there's also a document management system. There's a spreadsheet that can be used for project management, for learning management system. So it's this like all-in-one tool written in PHP, which you can run on any standard web hosting.
Now, there's a lot of players in this space. I mean, we've had a bunch of them on this show. So what distinguishes, what would you say be the primary two or three things that distinguish this project from a lot of the things we've talked about or just this kind of CMS groupware in general?
Right. The main difference is that we're all in one. So for most projects, what they have is a smaller core. And from then, you download modules or extensions, and you build what you need on that. In Tiki, everything comes bundled, and you just activate or deactivate things. And the other, so what that makes it basically is Tiki is the open source web application with the most built-in features, and by far, because the other projects are not really trying to do that.
Well, no, I could play a devil's advocate on that and say that that means that all of this stuff has to sort of get released lockstep. And if you have like a quick update that you want to make, say, to the spreadsheet part of it, you can't do that. And I can't just download that part of it and install it on my system. So what would you say to people that were arguing against it because of that?
Well, actually, we have a very aggressive release schedule. We have a new major release every 6 months, and minor releases are maybe every 1 or 2 months. So let's say now we just released 6.1. And 7.0 will come out in April. So the idea is that, yes, in the other models, what you'll have is the core will be stabler, and you'll keep the core maybe for 2 or 3 years, and the evolution will happen in the modules, which can come out, you know, every week or every month or whatever. In our case, but then that creates problems. So what there's a call in lots of these types of software to have what they call synchronized releases, to basically tell all the module developers, please, let's all release at the same time. And this is something that Ubuntu does, for example, to say, you know, every 6 months we have a release. So we follow that model, because since everything is all in one, well, naturally everything has to be released at the same time.
Okay, I guess that makes sense. Great. So let's start with some of the basic features. So it's a CMS system, which if you want to explain that, I think we probably explained it on 4 different shows. But let's go ahead and explain what a CMS is and how that helps me build a website.
Yeah, well, CMS means Content Management System, which is really a horrible way to explain things, because I could say that a piece of paper is a content management system. I could say a computer is a content management system. Just about anything can be used to manage content. But let's say just clearly, typically what it means is to be able to manage a website through your browser, typically. So you'll have a password, you'll log in, and you'll update different sections of your website. So typically it's to publish news articles, maybe a calendar, a blog, things like that.
Okay, so rather than me going to, say, some uploading tool like FTP or SFTP or maybe even other mechanisms like rsync, I would be changing the way my website looks strictly through a browser.
Exactly.
Okay, and then so that's the so that's the same as pretty much every other content management system that calls himself a CMS. Let's go beyond that then. What's the wiki part of it, and what are these other groupware tools that are also added?
Okay, so the wiki is really centric to Tiki, where the idea of first, you know, we need to define what a wiki is, because a lot of people know about Wikipedia. The whole idea of a wiki is basically a web page that you can edit through the browser. And one of the important things is, how come you can edit through the browser? Well, that's what it's designed for. And how it's also made for collaboration, so you can have lots of people participating. So there's particular tools, like, for example, the version history is very important. The reason why you can get a lot of people to work on a page to improve it is because you have version history. So if something goes wrong, you can roll back. And everybody can see the progress. So the wiki is very central, and most open source projects out there, lots of organizations have wikis to work on the documentation, to work on project management, to basically collaborate on content. So for us, the wiki is a central thing. And what we say basically is, the tagline for Tiki is, software made the wiki way. Because the way we think about a wiki is for the software. People think of that typically for content, but we use that approach for software as well. So everything in Tiki has that wiki way thing. So for example, our spreadsheet also has version history. Our bug tracker has version history, things like that. And everything's made really to be collaborative from the ground up.
Okay, now, like all wikis, it's supposed to have some sort of wiki markup language. Do you have your own, or is it like something like MediaWiki, like Wikipedia uses, or is it, or is it something else?
Unfortunately, each wiki engine has typically their own wiki syntax. There have been some efforts to harmonize that, but it hasn't yet happened. If there was a harmonization, we would definitely go for it. But there's some pain to change your syntax, so you only do it if it's worth it. So for now, I see it as a bit like Esperanto and English. So the media wiki syntax, which is what powers Wikipedia, is the de facto standard. Mm-hmm. And the other wiki syntaxes are basically like the other languages. And Esperanto, the Esperanto of the wiki world, was called it Wiki Creole, but it didn't get the mass adoption.
And is that the language you're using?
No, we use our own syntax. Because oh, okay. those the syntax is basically they evolve over the years. It's very incremental, where at one point you hit a problem, you have a need, and then you basically develop a syntax for that. For sure, we always look around, and we typically look at what Wikipedia does, and it, you know, we don't try to be different. But there's some things that in that syntax that are not very good, so we don't necessarily want to have a less good syntax just to follow a de facto standard. We're trying to do the best application possible.
Now, I'm going to get geeky just for a second here. Are you maintaining the links some sort of database that if I want to rename a page, it automatically updates all the pages that refer to it? Or is maintenance like a problem? I know it's a real problem on MediaWiki because they basically have to leave a go-to page in the old pages. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that?
Right. So we have the concept of backlinks. So we're a wiki, which is we have a database. We use MySQL as a database. So some some wikis have a text backend. In our case, it's MySQL. So we have that in the database. So if you rename a page, all the links that are active to that page will be renamed. And we also have a concept that if you want a page to have several names, so for example, because that's going to work for internal links within your wiki. But what happens if someone bookmarked that page? So we have the concept of alias, so that basically a page will have several names. And when you hit it with an old name, for example, it's going to redirect to the new name.
Cool. Yeah, I know that makes you a step ahead of MediaWiki, which has that problem. It's about the same as the content management system I'm familiar with. And now the name escapes me. The one that goes with... Squeak, Smalltalk, Peer, P-I-E-R, which is basically done with a database. Actually, it's done by always completely parsing the pages and re-rendering them back out as necessary, especially when you want to edit them. But you probably keep the original text to whatever people edit as part of your database, right?
Right. So the wiki syntax is basically two things. It's a storage format, and it's also a way to do the markup. So it has those two particularities.
Okay. And so my interface to this is going to be a website, a web page where I authenticate somehow so it knows it's me and keeps track of the changes that I can make and probably also gives me authorizations to get to some parts of it and without authorization to other parts. And then I'm looking at sort of the completed pages, but is there like an edit button somewhere so I can say, I now want to edit this?
Right, and that's the thing for all wiki engines. Basically, you have a page, and then if you have edit rights, you have a little edit button, and then you may or may not have to log in. You just change the page and you click save. That's it. That was why wikis got really popular really quick, because it was a fast way to edit pages.
So let's talk more about the groupware aspect. So you said there's a spreadsheet built in. What is that model on? Is it a very rich spreadsheet, or is it just simple, or what?
The spreadsheet is getting better and better. So basically, the first version of the spreadsheet was in 2004. And I personally had very high hopes for it. I was figuring everything's going towards the web. And this is going to be really cool. We're going to be able to have our stuff online and have it collaborative. But back in 2004, the tools and JavaScript and the browsers were not very fast. So it was difficult to do something really nice. But now we've given it a shot, upgraded the spreadsheet to using jQuery now. So basically now it's a much slicker interface and it's improving quite a bit. And the cool thing is you have your spreadsheet, which is in Tiki, but you can link to the wiki pages or link from the wiki pages. So for example, any cell in the spreadsheet, you can put wiki syntax in it. So you can put wiki syntax to include a whole wiki page in one of the cells, for example. Mm. Or you could take that spreadsheet and include it in a wiki page. So the typical thing is, let's say you have you're presenting a business case. What people will have for business case is one or two or three spreadsheets, and like a fairly long one or two documents in a word processor. Well, the way to do that in Tiki would be one or several wiki pages, which you can connect together with structures to make your table of content and all that. And you have your spreadsheets, and you just embed things one in the other. And basically, you can have a full web-based business case using these tools.
Cool. So it's got the spreadsheet, and what other groupware tools do you have integrated?
So, for example, there's a calendar.
Okay.
Calendar of events. There's a webmail. And here I'm going to state again what I said before. It's the open source web application with the most built-in features. So it's probably easier if you ask me, does it have stuff? And I'll say yes, because most of the time it has it. But let's say in a typical intranet context, what people will want is the calendar, the wiki, maybe a blog for like team update, team reports, You can also use it for project management, in which case there's a bug tracker, an issue tracker.
Mm-hmm.
You can basically build what you need there. And it's also very very flexible, where because the tool, like we're all sharing the same tool, we don't have like distinct extensions for different things. So basically, when someone builds a calendar, for example, there may be two or three or four people that are interested in a calendar. One person may be interested more in an event calendar. The other person is more in like in a groupware type calendar. So they're basically going to work together to add the features they each need to that calendar and make the sub features of the calendar optional. So you can basically, you know, mix and match those things. So you may say, hey, I want this, to solve this use case, I'll activate these features, or if not, I'll activate these other features.
Hmm.
And I think that's one of the key things, because one of my frustrations, I'm talking like 8-9 years ago when I was using other content management systems, I found it very frustrating to basically install the system and then to have to run around and find different extensions, try them. And then, you know, sometimes you're like, I like this thing from this extension, but this thing from this other extension, but they won't work together. Finally, you pick one, maybe not the one you would have wanted, but the one you think is going to survive, because you figure, hey, if everybody goes to one, maybe the other extension is not going to be maintained in 6 months. And frustrations like, I can't upgrade the core of my application because my extension is going to break. So those are the types of things that we basically do away with by having the all-in-one model.
Oh, okay. I was just relaxing there. So I'm fascinated by this, Mark. You've talked a lot about the technology there. There's a lot of questions on the IRC chat about the project itself. I wonder if you could tell me a bit about the project. For example, where did the code come from? What license is it under? Who are the sponsors? Can you tell me that sort of stuff?
Right. So I'll tell you first of all the base technology. So it's PHP, the programming language. The database we use is MySQL. The template engine that we use is called Smarty. And we use Xen framework for many of the components. And for the JavaScript layer, we use jQuery. So those are like the five main components. And there's a bunch of other libraries we also use, but those are really the five main ones. The license is LGPL. And basically, the project started in 2002. So now it's over 8 years old. And it started mostly for, you know, small websites and small collaborative communities. But over the years, as more and more people participated, well, more and more features were added and more use cases were covered. So far, there's over 225 people that have added source code to the core.
So who owns the copyright, Mark?
Basically, everybody who adds code, they're in the copyright.
So there isn't a single company that has got it aggregated, or do you use a contributor agreement, for example?
No, we don't. So basically, there's a Tiki Software Community Association, which is basically responsible for the trademarks and responsible for some of the legal stuff in the real world that we need to deal with. However, it's not an important force. It's really a duocracy. So whoever participates to the project will, lead it in a certain, push it and pull it in a certain way to have it address their use case.
So is that association a nonprofit? And which country is it based in?
Right. It's a nonprofit. It's based in Canada.
So it's a Canadian nonprofit, because I've just been looking this week at the Document Foundation is thinking of becoming a nonprofit, and they've picked Germany, and I don't know very many nonprofits outside California, to be honest. So in Canada, how is it working out for you being a Canadian nonprofit? Does that affect the way your community operates internationally, or is it irrelevant?
It makes no difference. I mean, it's mostly for the paperwork, because in reality, the association itself doesn't have like employees and like a budget to throw around and set priorities. Basically, it's the project was going very well the way it was working with this duocracy and all these different players in it, but we needed a way just to have a legal front to it to be able to get the trademarks and stuff like that. But in reality, the association's role is not to work on a development or to set priorities in terms of technical parts. It's just for the administrative stuff that in any case, most developers are not really interested in.
So do you have a company that is a main sponsor, or is the community not dominated by any company in particular?
It's not dominated, and I think that's actually a good thing. So it's very peer-to-peer. If we take the type of contributors to the system, if I had to put it like in three buckets, this is very Very simple, oversimplifying the situation, but just to give you an idea. So let's say one third of the activity from the community are basically consultants. So consultants, small consultants or consulting companies, they basically have a customer that comes to them and say, hey, you know, we need this intranet. Can you make it for us? And then this company will say, hey, sure, we can do it with Tiki and it's going to be fast and less expensive, etc. So that's about one third of the energy in the community. One other one third of the energy in the community is basically IT departments. So, for example, the Council of Europe, they use Tiki in-house. They have about 40 or 50 Tiki instances. And they basically have their staff, which they could just pick a technology or pay an outside vendor, but they basically have some of their staff which is dedicated to getting Tiki to work for them, and they participate to the community and they share back the improvements they make. So about one third would be these these IT departments. And the other one third, I would say, is basically hobbyists. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it could be typically, let's say, somebody who works his day job as a programmer in a bank. But, you know, his kid has a soccer club, and then he just decides to make a site for the soccer club. And as he's doing, he may find a few bugs and share them back. So you could think that, you know, the hobbyists are not going to, you know, account for that much, because individually they're not necessarily making, you know, long-term contributions. But if you add them all up, it's a lot of little things that make a big difference in the overall picture.
Right,
but of course, the lines blur, because sometimes the IT department will hire one of the consulting companies to do some of the things they don't necessarily want to do in house.
So, if I want to use Tiki and I'm concerned about making sure there's going to be a continuity of development and support, is there a company in the community that can give me that assurance in the same way that, for example, Enterprise DB can do with PostgreSQL?
Yeah, there's several companies basically that are available for these types of services, but none has like a dominant position where, you know, all the decisions are made for the overall community.
Right. I'm interested. Actually, you've changed your name or the naming style for the project recently. You used to always talk about being Tiki Wiki, and you've now focused just on Tiki.
Yeah.
Is there a reason behind that? Are you afraid of being lumped in with WikiLeaks, or what's the reason behind that?
Well, actually, we're very proud of our wiki origins. So basically, originally, the name of the project was TikiWiki. So the domain name was TikiWiki.org. But very quickly, about like, you know, 6 months into the project, it changed to TikiWiki CMS/groupware. Because right away, since the beginning, there were lots of features. And, you know, it wasn't, yes, it's very important to be a wiki, but it's also important to that people know that it's more than a wiki. It's also a CMS and a groupware. So basically, we had that for a while. But last year, we decided to rebrand to basically, and we were able to have the tiki.org domain name, which is very cool. So basically, we rebranded to Tiki Wiki CMS Groupware. We cut it basically in four words. And for us, yes, the short version is Tiki, because, you know, it's a mouthful to say that in a sentence, or you know, Tiki Wiki CMS Groupware. So just Tiki is basically the short version of what people were using anyway. But the official name of the project is with the four words, and we're very proud of our wiki origins. I think that, you know, wiki is a strong word. It means you know, it means collaboration, it means web, it means crowdsourcing. So it's still there. I know that some projects have rebranded to basically remove the word wiki, but that's not our choice.
Right. So I did have a more technical question from the IRC chat over here. People were asking about migration. How easy is it to migrate over to Tiki from, say, for example, from Joomla or from Drupal?
Okay. Well, in general, migrating between applications, whatever people tell you, it's always very difficult, because nobody's really interested in maintaining migration scripts. Migration scripts is something you may do once. You do it for your own use case. Maybe you'll share the code. But if someone comes, you know, 2 months later and says, hey, you know, can you help me with that? You're like, well, sorry, dude, you know, I already made my migration. And there's a new, and both applications are evolving. And especially if you're going to compare, let's say, and that's a good comparison, for example, Joomla, Tiki, and Drupal, they're in the same space of these web applications with lots of features. How do you migrate stuff with all these different features? So you could do it, for example, say, okay, I'll move the stuff from the calendar to the calendar. But then, you know, let's say Joomla may or may not have a wiki engine, you know, so how do you do that? And especially, it gets especially more difficult where perhaps in some systems, there's four calendars. So the migration script would be from which of those calendars to Tiki. So that being said, those migrations are more difficult. And typically, you know, they're doable, but typically it's just better just to copy paste, you know, if you have a few hundred pages or something. The migrations that we do that are important, I think that are worth it, are imported from MediaWiki, because some people in MediaWiki, a wiki engine is much more difficult to migrate than other types of applications, because you not only have the information, you also have the version history. So you want to keep that version history. So we have an importer from MediaWiki, and in the upcoming version, we'll also have an importer from WordPress. And those are relatively simple, because blogs are, you know, just, you know, one set of articles, and a lot of people use WordPress, so that was a simple choice.
Okay.
Go.
No, after you, Randall, that was me screwing up the handover to you. It's all right.
Don't worry. Oh, now everybody will know that we do this. We actually coordinate the handovers.
Damn, they'll find out.
Well, if they watched the Meta Show a couple of weeks ago, they'd know that anyway. But I had a couple of questions as I was sitting here listening, and also got it from a couple of questions from the chat room. Open source means that anybody can see the source code to this. Do you have concerns about the fact that now that Tiki is basically being deployed in a lot of different kinds of sites, that people will look to the source code looking for security holes and take advantage of that before you notice?
Well, that's always a concern. Security, security is very difficult. You can, you know, there's more and more stuff in the news, even from some very, very large organizations. So, of course, it's a concern. We have a security team, and basically, typically what happens is people that are using it, if they discover something, they're going to send the information to our security team, and mm-hmm. that gives us the time to patch it up and to release a new version. And that's also why it's very important to have a very quick release schedule. So for us, you know, we have our major releases every 6 months, but the minor releases can be done at any time. So if there's a security issue, within a day or two or a week, whatever, you know, as soon as the bug is the security vulnerability is patched, we can release right away. But the thing is, the different use cases, it's security is different things to different people. So for example, if someone is using it in an intranet context, so all their users are trusted, well, that's not the same type of so of issue. So what they're worried about is, for example, someone if that thing is, you know, if their intranet is available on, you know, not behind a firewall. So they're worried about someone attacking it in a certain way. But let's say you have a collaborative community where anybody can log in, then you're worried about privilege escalation of privileges. So security is very complex, and it really depends what you're trying to protect. And also there's some trade-offs, because, you know, there's convenience and there's security. And sometimes, you know, if you just have a blog, you're the only person on that thing. You don't want that, you know, that the high security. So what we do typically, we have different settings of security, and you pick, by default, the default install has the most secure settings, but then you can reduce the security settings for your use case if you want, you know, things to be more convenient.
Now, you're basing this project partly on, if I heard earlier, Smarty, which is a templating system that's an add-on to PHP. Now, you're obviously then vulnerable to whatever security problems that Smarty might have, right?
Well, actually, I don't even remember there have been some for Smarty, but yeah, it's true that we're in general vulnerable to. It's been happened in the past. There was something called XML RPC, and mm-hmm. several open source projects had it, and there was a vulnerability in there. But that's pretty rare, because typically, you know, that's not active code, and it's just, you know, if you call it, typically the vulnerabilities will be from our part of the code. And also, we have a lot of it, right? But what we do to basically reduce the risks of security, so I'm not worried about having, you know, more people looking at it. I think that's a good thing. If the community grows, we'll have more people looking at the thing. And mm-hmm. overall, there's more good people out there, and they'll help us, you know, and help themselves improve the application. But what we do to reduce the issue, like, especially since we have a lot of code, is that every single file, or like the vast majority of files, has like a kill switch at the top. So basically, anything, almost everything in Tiki, you can turn it off. Of course, stuff like the login box, you can't turn it off. It's always there. But in general, you can turn things off. So if ever we discover there's a security issues, for example, in the calendar or in a search or something like that, then we can tell people, look, you know, we have this patch out, but if you don't have the time or you don't want to upgrade, are you using the calendar? If you're not using the calendar, well, then don't worry, you're okay. If you're using the calendar, just turn it off. But then you can at least continue to use your application until you have the time to do the proper upgrade.
Now, I'm also curious, one of the things that seems to peeve me the most about large-scale PHP development, and it's not because I'm a Perl guy, I don't want to show that it's because of my bias, but a lot of times what I see happens in large PHP projects is that there isn't quite as much emphasis on testing, on development that actually works in terms of making sure that things don't break when things get changed and upgraded. What's your testing model? Are you able to test a lot of the data models independent of being embedded in PHP pages, or is it, or you don't talk about testing at all?
We have some unit tests, mm-hmm. but it's not a huge coverage. It's a relatively small coverage, but it's growing, so we have that. Mm-hmm. But our main test is called dogfooding, because we have huge assets in terms of websites for tiki.org. So we have more than a dozen subdomains with all the sites, the documentation, development, and our policy is to dogfood things. So basically, for example, if you take in the early days, we didn't use our own bug tracker. We had a bug tracker in Tiki, but it wasn't mature enough, so we're still using the bug tracker in SourceForge. But eventually, it wasn't quite mature yet enough, but we figured, okay, let's just start using our bug tracker, and that's how it's going to improve. So it was tough for a while because it wasn't really there yet, but as we start using it, we catch the bugs very quickly. So I'll give you a typical example. So every 6 months, we have a new release. Well, the month before the release, we start having like alpha and beta versions. Well, all our main public sites are upgraded to that version before we release. So when we release 6.0, you know that already our documentation site, our development site, our profile site, et cetera, already are running it. And that helps us catch stuff because, you can do any tests you want, but it's really when you try it in the real world situations with all that data, that's really how you catch them. So that recursive use of our software on ourselves is really, I think, the best, by far the best way to catch things. And I've seen that over and over, that if we have some features in Tiki that are not necessarily things that we would use for the community, and those things tend to, the bugs can live longer in there.
I appreciate the fact that you're dogfooding, because there's some organizations, like you were saying earlier, that if you're not using your own bug tracker, then you're obviously not going to see when bugs get introduced to the bug tracker. Now, the downside of that is a couple. One, and I'm sure you're well aware of this, but I want to bring it out for our audience, is that one, if you break the bug tracker, you can't report the bug because it's broken.
I know. That has happened.
I called it. Okay.
Absolutely. But, with all those things, it's always a trade-off. There's no perfect model. And it's just that when you pick one model, you're always going to see the frustrations of the other model. So, yes, it is frustrating for a day or two because now the bug tracker is not working and then it needs to get fixed. But in general, it tends to get fixed faster because of that. And if there's any issues, well, I prefer that our own community catches them than to release the software and then to have people, that are not necessarily, participating in the community that don't necessarily know what to do about that. So I'm comfortable that it's a good trade-off.
And the other thing that's also a downside about dogfooding, and again, I appreciate the fact that you're actually testing by running your own software, but another thing I appreciate about that is that the downside of it is that I, as an individual developer, I can't run a battery of tests to make sure that it's working in all the environment before I submit it or commit it back to you if I'm a committer. Whereas if you had some sort of automated testing system, then I could run a suite of tests to make sure I didn't break something else in the commit or the patch that I want to send you.
Right. Well, and that's why there are some tests in the places where, especially the more recent code, that's also part of the model, is that it's all in one. So at one point we may say, okay, now let's rewrite the permission system. So we yank everything out, we put out a new permission system, we deploy it everywhere. So of course when you do the new stuff, especially low level stuff like that, where you really want it, you don't want your permission system, you don't want to introduce bugs there. So there we have a testing suite. But in some of the stuff, it's just not cost effective to introduce some tests there, and you're fairly confident you're not going to make any problems. And if you do, well, you'll just catch them and fix them. So I think it really depends which part of the software you're looking at, and it'll give you different answers.
I think you're being a bit naive there. Being a bit naive, actually, when you're saying that you're not actually doing that much testing on this thing, especially weren't you talking about something like a million lines of code or something? I mean, it's huge, right?
Right, but a lot of those parts are code that's not us that's maintaining. We're getting it from somewhere else. So, for example, we had a lot of stuff from Zen Framework, and all their stuff is all unit tested, and it's all very stable. And it's very every once in a while we'll catch a bug, and we'll submit a patch to them. But in general, we don't have much to do. So the places where there's going to be bugs is in our own code or in the templates, or in the CSS or something like that. So. It depends where in the code, really, because you're looking at it from the front end perspective. It's not that much of a problem, because also that everything is fairly simple code, and it's fairly segmented off in each part. So it's pretty rare the places in the code where if you change something, you can break something everywhere. That will be like in a database layers or stuff like that. But when you do that, of course, there you're extra careful. And you also, you may start things. If you're going to do some changes in one of those places, you may not do it on trunk. You're going to start an experimental branch, play it with it there, ask other people to review it. And when people say, hey, it worked for me, then you can merge it back into trunk.
And speaking of merging and branching, what technologies are you using for sharing your repository? Is this Git, I presume?
We use SVN.
Branching with SVN. Okay. Sorry, I've just had some bad flashbacks there. And what's I know you talked a little bit about this earlier, but it sounds like you have a group of committers and a core team. And so do you have a committee that sort of manages, like, this feature goes in, this feature doesn't, or is that all group decision, or what level do you decide what the next release of Tiki will have in it?
Well, basically, it's okay. So we have an open commit policy. So basically, mm-hmm. we have 225 people that have committed, but we have over 450 that have commit access, because for us it's very easy. They just come and they say, hey, I want to help out. They give us their SourceForge username, and then we just give them an account, and then they can start participating. So we go wiki way. So instead of in some projects you have to send in a few patches, and then people in the core team will look at it, and if they like what they've seen, they're going to give you a commit access. But we're like a wiki, so we give you commit access, and if ever there's a problem, then we're going to, review it or revert or something like that. So, but of course, a lot of people, they take the commit access, but they may never participate. So, which is why we have 450 accounts. Now, basically that's it. And in terms of the decision making, because there's all the features are all in one, it's not like this third-party extension thing. Well, mm-hmm. Everybody that's putting something in is going to affect everybody in the community. So some of the main principles is to avoid duplication. So if someone comes in and they say, hey, I want to write a new feature. So for example, just recently there was an accounting system which has been added. So this is a new feature which is coming in Tiki 7.0. So mm-hmm. we had a shopping cart, but we didn't have an accounting system. So that's a totally new feature, and that's perfectly, that fits in. We add it, and we're very happy. But if someone says, you know what, I think the calendar is not very good, and I'm going to write a new calendar, well, then, it's like, what's going to happen? Because people already have information in the other calendar. So if you're going to write a better feature, and you improve that feature, it's okay to say, I'm going to rip out the code completely and write some new code, which is a lot better. That's fine. But there's only going to be one calendar in Tiki. So you have to make sure that you manage the data migration. So that the benefit is that everybody in the community is all converging on the same calendar or on the same accounting system, et cetera. So in terms of decisions, it always sort of gets, you would think that there would be these big debates, but there's not really, because when someone comes and they want to add a new feature, most people are happy, or they're like, well, I won't use it, so I don't really need it, but hey, why not? And if we did try to put a limit on what was possible to put in the application, I think we'd get into lots of discussions and debates which are not very healthy, because someone would say, well, how come my use case, my feature is less important than something that's already in there? Or somebody would say, hey, that's not fair. Like, who are you to decide? So in general, we just let people do their thing as long as there's no duplication. And at first, if the feature is not very good, that's okay. We still want it in core, but you tag it as experimental. So it could stay in for one or two versions as an experimental feature. That informs everybody that it's maybe not very good. Maybe there's going to be some major changes, but at least there's an intention for that feature. And if those other people are interested, they may join in with that developer and take it to the next level.
So, Mark, I'm fascinated to know, you seem to have a close familiarity with the code. What is your role in the project? Do you have an official role, or are you the volunteer put forward by the community to be dissected on Floss Weekly?
Well, we don't really have like those like titles or roles. Basically, a lot of people do lots of stuff. I tend to be in the middle of the circle because I've been active in the project for a very long time. I joined the project when it was just starting. I just joined the mailing list on day 10 of the project, and basically I started participating. I liked the vibe of the community, and then I got more and more involved. And the people that were there, like the founders, they're no longer active. So I'm like the longest standing, still active member. So that's why a lot of people, I know, you know, a lot of people that worked on it during the years. So I'm a good go-to person. If someone says, you know, I want to work on this feature. So recently, for example, we wanted to improve our right-to-left support. Well, I remembered like 5 years ago that this guy, you know, who worked on that, and, you know, he would be a good guy because 5 years ago, he basically introduced that feature and now we want to improve it. So I pulled out his email and emailed him, and now he's going to help us improve the right-to-left feature in the next version.
Right. So is Tiki related to your day job in some way, or is this purely a passionate hobby?
Well, it's both. It is also my day job. Basically, in 2003, I decided that I was having a lot of fun. I started off as a volunteer doing it basically for nonprofits. I used to do e-commerce, and I needed some content management system and a wiki for some nonprofits that I was helping out. And I didn't want to end up having to maintain all these different sites, so I wanted to just give them a CMS and let them log in and update their stuff. And then I had a lot of fun doing that, and I figured, hey, there's an opportunity here, and a lot of people are going to need these types of tools. So since 2003, I've been basically full-time on Tiki. So I have a consulting business which helps people deploy Tiki in their installations. I also do like some custom development, adding some new features. And when I say custom development, what that means is basically a need that a customer has, I'm going to translate into a general purpose feature that would be useful for anybody in Tiki. And then that's added to the next version of Tiki, and then it's configured for their specific needs.
Right. So at the risk of opening a can of worms, what is the position when it comes to integrating Tiki with other enterprise applications? So, for example, the company that I work with, the one up here, works on an open source single sign-on system. Is it feasible to integrate Tiki with things like enterprise single sign-on with e-business systems, or is it very much a freestanding document-only tool?
Well, it's certainly made to be standalone in the sense that it doesn't need anything else to survive, to do its thing. But for authentication, for example, there's plenty of ways to send out that to another application. So it could be like OpenLDAP, it could be CAS, it could be there's like 8 or 9 different external authentication mechanisms.
Right. And so do you have a lot of people who are doing that?
Yeah, of course. So typically the use case is in the enterprise. So in the context of an enterprise wiki or department wiki, they already have their Active Directory or OpenLDAP instance. So basically we're just going to connect to that. And actually recently, well, about 2 years ago, so it used to be just to log in. But now when you connect Tiki to OpenLDAP, it's also going to give you the group information. So you can use the groups from OpenLDAP as native groups in Tiki to manage your permissions and all that.
Right. And so what do you think is coming up next for you? I mean, you've already got more lines of code than the average word processor. where do you think Tiki is going to head over the next few years?
Okay. Well, my big plan on that is basically for it to continue to have all the features that people need. So, you know, it's whatever people need, really. So, but whatever people do through the web browser, you know, and they need something at the other end, well, Tiki should be able to help them with that. So, so it'll just have like larger community, more features. Now, just because we have all those features doesn't mean that, you know, there's some features that we won't do. Like, I know that's a bit of a surprise, but stuff that you can't really do in PHP MySQL, we're going to partner with other open source projects. So my big project for 2011 is basically called Tiki Suite. Tiki Suite is Tiki with a combination of other open source projects to make this all-in-one like web operating system type thing. So Kaltura, for example, is an open source project which is for basically online video editing. And then there is Big Blue Button, which is an online web conferencing system. Basically, you can have audio, video, chat, and screen sharing. And that's basically for distance education. And so it's basically partnering with tools like that. There's also ClipperZ, which is a password management system. And by having all that combination, and the goal is to have that in a available as a prepackaged like a VMware type instance, where you can just have that as an appliance, and that would be basically a whole package that you would need to run like a small business, for example.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we're running out of time, unfortunately, because we're up against a hard limit here. But I just wanted to thank you for coming on the show. Are you looking for more people to work on this, and in particular, what kind of people?
Well, absolutely. More people and just any kind of people. I mean, the first thing is does the project help you? Can you use it to solve one of your use cases? And if so, just join on and get your commit access. And it's very open community. And we're not like, there's not like this, core versus module developer and this two-tiered system. Everybody's part of the community, and we need people to do documentation. We need people for user interface, bug reports, etc. There's one thing I'd like to mention also coming up in the future. So January 15th is the 10th anniversary of Wikipedia. So there's going to be events all over the world, and there's a website, 10.wikipedia.org, and just go there and check out what's available in your city, and you go and join the people there.
Very cool, very cool. And I have to ask the question, or people will get mad at me for not asking it since it's become a tradition now. Emacs or VI?
Well, actually, I use Nano.
No! The third category.
The third rail.
It's perfectly okay. And I already know you like PHP over Perl, so I'm not even going to go there. Well, it's been great having you on the show. Those watching the live stream know that we had a bit of trouble trying to bring Mark on at the beginning, but glad we sorted it all out. Mark, thank you very much for coming on Floss Weekly.
All right. Thanks, Rachel. Thanks, Simon. Take care.
Very good. Very good. So that was Mark Laporte, who is just the guy in the center of the storm for Tiki Wiki CMS Groupware. And glad to have him on the show finally after getting some technical difficulties handled. So what do you think, Simon?
It's very interesting technology. I shall be wanting to take a closer look at it because we're looking for a content management system to look after ForgeRock's website. Mm-hmm. And I've been looking at some of the obvious candidates like Drupal and Joomla, but it could be that the Swiss Army knife approach that they're taking in Tiki is a better answer for us.
Well, and I do actually appreciate the fact, although I was a little constrained at the beginning, I didn't want to talk too much about how I think this one monolithic thing is probably the wrong way to go, but it sounds like you made a good case for it. So I appreciate you're going to really release lockstep anyway. You might as well just make it a huge bundle. And, these day and age, there's no point in saying I only want this feature and that feature downloaded, because what's disk space these days? It's really nothing. So kind of happy with that. So, and once again, it's one of these things. If Leo Laporte was still on the show, he'd be installing it already.
Absolutely. I thought I heard that tapping in the background, but it wasn't. One of the good things about it being a great big lump of code like that is, honestly, you end up with a great big lump of code on your own computer when you have the thing running after you've installed all the features that you need. By installing it that way, you know that it's all installed, correctly configured, correctly wired up together. So what if it's a million lines of code? You're going to have a million lines of code in your computer anyway. If you don't have to put them together, it's much less likely that it's going to end up being screwed up when you put it together. So I do think that monolithic approach has things going for it, despite the obvious problems that there might be resulting from it.
And it was clearly, as you mentioned, there was a way to have some configuration file that would turn off any of the features you don't want for your particular setup. So that's probably fine. That wasn't much of an issue at all. So glad he got to come on the show. Last show of the season. Speaking of the last show of the season, let me go ahead and talk about, that's my awkward transition to, finding the little spreadsheet here, my awkward transition to who's coming up. Now, I just over the last couple of weeks did all of my Q1 bookings. So there's a lot of new people on the list here. So in fact, speaking of Big Blue Button, which he just mentioned a few minutes ago, we actually had Big Blue Button coming on January 5th. Oh, I should actually say before we get started on that, I was going to miss 5 shows coming up because of my frequent cruises that I was doing. And I brainstormed a little bit and I said, you know, I have co-hosts that have been doing such a wonderful job. You, Simon, everybody else doing such a great job working with me on this, that I gave Dan Lynch the chance to take the helm, also because I know he has his own podcast and can manage all the other details behind the scenes, Linux Outlaws, his podcast. And so Dan is actually filling in for me for 5 upcoming shows. He's booking the guests himself. He's doing basically my entire job for 5 upcoming shows. And he booked Big Blue Button. Fred Dixon's going to come in, talk about that. And he's going to manage that show. That's the next show coming up next week. I'll be back at the helm for the show that was rescheduled from before. That's the show with David Anchors and James Cotton talking about OpenPilot, the unattended UAV software. I still don't know what UAV means. I should look that up before the next show. We've got also just recently scheduled John Hugg talking about VoltDB, which is yet another one of these NoSQL solutions, although he would beg to differ. Actually, it's an SQL solution that is better than the NoSQL solutions, if I recall the stuff on that. John Wigley, I'm mispronouncing this, I'm sure, talking to us about Ledger, which is an accounting system, an open source accounting system that people are using, full double entry system being used in medium and large businesses, actually. Dan was able to schedule Chris McDonough. Chris, sorry if I'm mispronouncing your last name like I often do. Pylons, which is the Python web framework, one of the 2 or 3 main competing event-driven frameworks to be able to build web services and other sorts of services. That'll be great. We got a couple slots we're still trying to fill, but we also have brought on, we'll be bringing on Jeremy Carbow. I should ask these people to send me like little snippets of them saying their own name.
You need a phonetic spelling of the names, really, don't you, so that you can work them out.
And I'm just, it's just horrible because I only see this written and then I have to actually read it on the air and it's horrible. Anyway, John Carbow is going to come talk to us. Jeremy Carbow, sorry. Sunlight Labs, which is open source data. That's going to be a really important show. I'm really looking forward to that, especially with the whole WikiLeaks thing that just happened. So, and it's still happening. I want to actually find out what Jeremy's position is on that. Ludovic Marcotte is going to talk to us about Packet Fence, which is a captive portal system, and also about Sogo, and I forgot to look what that one up was. Michael Yap has got coming up with a Joget, J-O. See, even the project names I can't pronounce. Ah! They're going to fire me. This is my last show, guys. Nice knowing y'all. Michael Yap's talking about Joget, which is a really rich web interface designing platform. Really, really cool stuff. Similar to what we're doing with Cappuccino and things like that. It'd be great. Darren Schreiber, 2600 Hertz project. We had to reschedule him from a previous time. And finally, this is all Q1. And I'll be reading these names over and over again, I'm sure. Gilad Bracha is going to come on. He's a guy that's been around for a legacy amount of time. Going to talk to us about a small talk derivative called Newspeak, which is getting a lot of traction in the language development community. So, and more people on the short list. Believe it or not, we've got more people after that. Twitch.tv/floss. There's a link there to the spreadsheet that tells you all of our upcoming guests and are the ones we're actually trying on. If somebody's not on that list and you want them to be, email me, merlin@stoneinch.com. That will take
you need some of this, I think. You need to get some of this, I think, actually, Randall. It would help things flow more smoothly, relax you. You know, Gilad Bracha, I used to work with him at Sun. As I recall, he's the guy who describes himself as a computer language theologian.
Mm-hmm.
He's an absolutely fascinating guy with very strong opinions about programming languages. That could be a fascinating show.
That's going to be a great show. And Simon, since you worked with him, maybe we'll bring you on as the co-host for that one. That'd be really fun.
That sounds exciting, yeah.
Very good, very good. What else is on my list here? So, and as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, did I? I guess I'll have to leave a note to myself. Hold on. Okay. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I went on a cruise recently. I took pictures of the lunar eclipse. If you go to flickr.com/photos/Randall-Schwartz, you can see my pictures from that cruise. And just kidding off a cruise, just going on another cruise, I'm going to be on Joko Cruise Crazy, jokocruisecrazy.com next week, which is why Dan's taking the helm. There's still a chance to get on that if you can fly to Florida by Friday. So if you can do that, go ahead and book yourself on the last remaining couple slots there. Only a couple couple more plugs here. Just got approved as a press member for SoCal Linux Expo, which is the SCALE is what it's normally called. But if you go to SoCalLinuxExpo.org, that's the big open source Linux conference that happens in LA every year. And I'm very happy it's coming up in February. So check that out. One more plug, then we'll go over to you, Simon. My friend Mark Hartwell, who we chatted about, and actually I was at his mom's house to do an interview, I think a couple years ago, about this time. Mark Hartwell has the world's shortest podcast at worldshortestpodcast.com. He's been on hiatus for a year and a half or so, and he's back. He's back, baby. So I'm going to have to go listen to those. Apparently he's got three or four shows already up. Hilarious stuff, and I was mad that he stopped doing it for a while, but apparently he's back. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. There's the end of my plugs. Simon, your chance.
I've got hardly anything to plug compared with that, I'm afraid, Randall. As always, I'd ask for folks who need an open source single sign-on system to take a look at forgerock.com, because we're a small, excited business looking forward to being a big business one day. I've got some stuff coming up. I've got a visit to Latvia coming up for the Open Source Association there. So if you're in or near Riga, do come along and hear my keynote. I've got a few other trips coming up. If you would like me to speak at an open source or Linux user group where you are, then send me an email. I'm simon@webmink.com. You can see down there my URL for webmink.com. Do subscribe to the links on there. What else should I be plugging, Randall? I'm running out of plugs here.
I have a
column on Computer World UK. I'd love you to subscribe to that as well. That's computerworlduk.com, and the column is called Simon Says. My Amazon wish list is still available. Let me see. I'm on Bitcoin. You can send me Bitcoins. I don't know what else. I'm out of plugs. Sorry.
I think that's good. Well, and as we mentioned a little bit in the beginning of the show, I'll take notes about that, about having to mention at the beginning of the show too. I do actually want us to start looking at things that work and don't work about being in an open source community. So Simon and I will be talking about that offline after this show and in the ensuing weeks, because I think, you know, after 146 of these shows, I think if you listen to all of them, you can pick up some sort of things behind the scenes or between the lines. But I'd really like to bring out some of these things and make them much more explicit, you know, successes and failures in the open source community as we see them sitting back and watching them. So Simon, sounds a good idea, huh?
I think that's a great idea. You know, we were discussing this on Twitter. The first one we need to talk about is how open source communities really do need to have on their homepage an explanation of what the software does, so you don't have to download the source code and compile it to find out. And I'm sure there's some more of those that we'll need to dig into.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's plenty enough time consumed at the end of this show, so I think I'm going to have to just say what I always say, which is we'll see you next time on Floss Weekly. All right. Let me take one swig out of my empty cup. Look, it's an empty cup. I am not going to be able to start.
And it's me that's already been on the whiskey as well.
I tell you, people think I've got a full glass,
even if you have an empty cup.
Yeah, people think I'm crazy when I'm drunk, but this is me sober. This is how I am sober. It's very scary.